Hi, everybody, and welcome to Mecha Dragon, a podcast about all the geeky and nerdy stuff you love. Brought to you by Captain Geek and the Dark Nerd. I'm your captain, Will.
And I'm your nerd, Jess.
Today, we're talking Wonder Woman 1984, directed by Patty Jenkins, starring Gal Gadot, Pedro Pascal, and Kristen Wiig. Almost had a little brain fart there. And we are very privileged and happy to be joined today by, once again, returning guest and friend of the show, Jessica Markram, who is a social worker by day and by night, a writer and game designer. Welcome back to the show, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me. I love being here, and I'm excited to talk about Wonder Woman.
Excellent, yeah.
It's your first time here co-hosting with me. I've kind of dropped out the last couple times, so this is my first time hanging out with you, so welcome.
Let's get into it.
I thought you were hiding from me.
I know. I don't like you. I mean, let's get that out of the way.
Too much Jess power at once. Yeah.
I've yet to meet you, but no thanks.
Well, on that happy note, maybe that is the perfect intro to Wonder Woman 1984, because we have some, at least I have some mixed feelings about this movie.
I don't.
your feelings are very clear then. Okay. All right. But as we like to do, I want to begin with a brief non-spoilery section where we give our general impressions. We'll kind of rate the movie and then move on to the deep dive, so to speak. So why don't we kick this off with Jessica's general impressions? So what are your general non-spoiler impressions of this movie, Jessica?
Ooh.
I know. High pressure.
Yeah, I'm going to call on my former life as a opera singer and describe this the way Rossini described Wagner by saying it had some beautiful moments interspersed with interminable quarter hours.
Nice.
Okay. I can see that. But wait, but hold the phone. You're an opera singer?
Yeah. What was going on there?
Yeah. Before I became a social worker.
Wow. So does that mean that at some point in your life, if not now, you could break glass by singing? Was that a thing?
Or is
that
no?
Okay.
I mean, somebody probably can, but
you could possibly break out into song randomly at any moment. Wow!
Is this the sort of movie that wanted you to make you break out in song?
No, but speaking of music, I miss the electric cello. They have the theme, but they didn't play it in the electric cello. I don't know if that's a spoiler, but I felt its absence.
Alas, well, if it's an absence, then I'm going to pretend like it's not a spoiler, at least right now. So yeah, but so what do you think about this movie generally without any spoilers?
I just answered you. I was like, me still? Okay.
Oh, that's true. Well, that was quite brief. That's true.
I had very mixed feelings on it. The parts that I liked, I really liked, but not as much as I liked anything in the first movie. And it's hard to compare a sequel to its first movie because so few of them are better than the first movie. But on a second viewing, because I watched it on Christmas and then I watched it today, because when I watched it on Christmas, I wasn't sure how I felt. So I wanted to watch it again and take notes. I realized that the parts that I liked were all kind of fan service-y parts. And so I wasn't sure if I actually liked them or if I just like being pandered to.
Huh, that's interesting. It is kind of hard to talk about details without getting into any spoilers.
Yeah, so we're talking best of 2020 here, right?
Yeah.
That's what she's saying.
So let's do it this way. So how many magic crystals out of 10 would you give this movie?
I mean,
Don't make me whip out my lasso of truth.
Yeah. I mean, my first thought was 4.
Oh, whoa.
Like, they tried really hard in parts. So maybe like a 6.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Jess.
That's so mean.
Yeah. Oh, well, no, I mean,
it's not when it's wonderfully accurate.
Okay, Dark Nerd, what are your general impressions?
Well, I sent you my general impressions through text the other day. let me see if I can pull those up real quick. Sorry.
Yeah, all you have to do is scroll up.
I know. I can't remember if I think I texted in the group chat with the other guys. Anyway.
Can you just explain how texting works?
Yeah. There's a button here I got to push and then push another. I don't know how this.
Are you from 1918?
No, I'm not. I'm from 1978, which is close to 1984. It was 1984. There was the girl jogging down the street in the leotard, and you know, they really went pretty heavy with the 1984, which is not one of my favorite decades to have lived through or remember. But I would say this movie, like Jessica said, they really nailed a couple parts, but the rest of it kind of fell apart. I'd say Gal Gadot and Chris Pine are the stars of this film. Gal Gadot just doing more of her Wonder Woman thing, but Chris Pine was kind of what brought it together for me. He was probably my favorite part of the movie.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't my favorite. I've never been a huge fan of Wonder Woman. She's just always kind of bored me as a character.
Uh-oh, here comes the troll.
Yeah. And this movie wasn't really about her as much. I mean, there was a little bit in her progress, her arc through the movie, but it was really just about the all the other stupid stuff.
Okay.
So I would go simply because of Chris Pine. He brings it up from a 5 to a 6 for me because, like Jessica said, they did try. They tried hard, but I just didn't really care a lot for the direction they went and the villains, quote unquote, that they introduced.
Okay, I see.
But I do think I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman 3, where they're going to introduce Condiment Man, because that's really the only way they could go from here.
Oh boy, Condiment King, which, that's right. I think the news just broke today that they greenlit the next Wonder Woman movie, right? So we're recording this on the 27th of December.
Yeah, and I actually signed up for HBO Max on Christmas Day, and I don't know. I can't get my refund. I got to pay for the month.
Well, there's other stuff on HBO.
Yeah, I found.
No, you should watch
The Flight Attendant.
The Linda Carter show's there.
The Flight Attendant's really good.
His Dark Materials. Oh, watch The Vow.
Ooh.
That should be crazy.
Should be cray.
And it's all true. So my general impressions. You know, I think I'm falling about where you guys are on it. I wanted to love this movie because I really, really liked, dare I say, even loved the first Wonder Woman movie, which is perhaps even the best of the DC Comics movies that's out right now.
With the crappy villain.
Well,
yeah.
The thing is, I'm just saying I wanted to love this movie, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. Now, there were parts that were very shining, wonderful moments and parts of this movie, but it just didn't all quite come together. And frankly, and I'm going to talk more about this in the spoilery section, but there are parts that I found to be a little bit too hokey for me to like find believable, and therefore kind of took me out of the story a little bit. And I don't know whether, you know, the writers were being like too heavy handed with things, or I just felt like, it almost felt like I was reading a comic book instead of watching a movie in the way that some things were constructed.
Well,
and in a way that didn't quite translate to the cinematic medium.
Exactly. It does make perfect sense, because I was thinking that the second time through. It's like the way, you know, they're choreographing some of the stunts and stuff. I'm like, this is almost exactly how it would look in the frame of a comic book page.
Well, you know,
and
I
think they did good doing that, but I just don't think, like you said, I don't think it really related.
It wasn't visual for me. It was just the way that the story was written and constructed. And I wonder if this is because of the fact that Geoff Johns co-wrote the script, you know, who's been a big wig at DC Comics for a while. So, I'm going to give it 6 Magic Crystals out of 10 as well, because it wasn't like it didn't actively hurt me to watch it.
But we didn't just invoke 666, the mark of the beast. You win some, you lose some.
Pretty much. So with that, I think it is time to move directly into spoiler territory. So if you don't want spoilers, spoiler alert.
Is this the one where Iron Man dies at the end? I can't remember.
You always say that.
I know.
Yeah. So,
well, I wish this movie was a little better.
Ooh, what will you give up for that?
Oh yeah, what are you giving up for that? Oh. You're gonna like ruin the MCU for us or something?
Apparently, 5 hours of my life.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay. All right. So in spoiler territory now, can you elaborate a little bit, Jessica, on what you were talking about and what you didn't quite do it for you?
Yeah. So the scenes that I really loved were the opening with the Amazons. I thought was amazing. I wanted more with the Amazons. But it also set up the theme of the movie that did not make sense, which seemed to be wants versus the truth. And those aren't really opposed.
It was a weird construction. And that was part of why I said it felt more like a comic book to me, you know, not the best of comic books for sure.
Yeah, if it had been like, you know, you took the easy path and you cheated, you need to learn patience, which they did say, like, I saw it 5 hours ago. But, you know, if they had really hammered that home of like instant gratification won't give you a real victory, like that's a very meritocracy term or take.
Yeah.
Kind of like, okay, whatever. But that's something standard that we've seen in a lot of superhero stuff. Mm-hmm. But the way they showed it, like Maxwell Lord was a child of abuse and he had grew up like poor. His classmates were racist to him. And the moral was like, hey, don't try and fight systemic oppression and get out of poverty and change your situation. Like, fuck your ambition and your dreams. Stay at home in your own backyard, Dorothy. You don't better your situation.
It was like, I really feel like they could have developed this theme in a much better way. And I think that honestly, because the theme really is what a story rests on. I mean, It's what a movie or a story is really about. And if you fuck that up, like I do believe they did in this movie. It's just like the skeleton of the story that you hang everything on is all rickety and it's going to fall apart. And I kind of feel like that's exactly what happened.
There's a scene where Diana and Cheetah or Barbara beat up the same exact guy, but the music is totally different. And is it just because Barbara's going too far, or is it because she didn't deserve that power? Like, it's okay for Diana to do it because she's trained and she's like, she can save Barbara, but heaven forbid Barbara save herself. Like, that's a weird message.
It was a very strange message. Like, I think that, you know, the most charitable interpretation that you could say the theme was where they didn't quite develop it right would be maybe something like, you know, I'm even coming up short here, you know, because it was kind of like it felt like it was about like, oh, well, you don't deserve to have something if you take a shortcut or.
Right. The quick and easy path leads to the dark side.
Yeah. Like, you know, they're trying to teach her this lesson at the end of that first sequence when she was a kid. Right. But I don't think it quite came across in that moment
when I was watching it, it's like, oh, she's being clever and she's, you know,
yes.
She got knocked off the horse. Now she's got to find a way to accomplish the goal. And she used some innovation and, you know, she was intuitive and found a way, you know, over that hurdle. Mm-hmm. And she got punished for it when otherwise she'd still be standing on the side of the trail, you know, walking.
I mean, if they had established before the race began, when, you know, they were talking to her or whatever.
Yeah, set the rules.
That it's about more than just getting to the finish line. It's about doing it the right way. Mm-hmm. Right. That's what they were trying to develop. But instead, it turned into this thing where it just played as like kind of a slightly different theme, you know, whereas I was right there with you, Jess, when what you were saying where, oh, it's like she's being, you know, she's innovating, she's finding novel, you know, she's being clever, she's being resourceful, and like all this stuff, you know, they didn't say to her, you have to, you know, follow the track, you have to do things the right way. Instead, they just let her go through all that and then punished her.
Right.
You know, so even if just for the audience's benefit, they would have had a conversation, you know, like a couple words between Hippolyta and, you know, whoever, you know, something
or somebody like Philippus. Can we have Philippus in these movies, please?
Yes. Like, they could have done that there, but they didn't, you know. I mean, they did tell Diana, the child Diana, like, it's more than it appears or whatever. But that was so vague as to be almost, you know, meaningless.
Aside from that, the first opening scene in Themyscira was really cool, and I loved how they did it. It was a cool idea they had with the colors, you know, that shot up in the air so they could see it, and then they dropped the little flags. I thought that
was fun. I loved the first three colors were like Wonder Woman colors.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, she's doing her best, and you're really rooting for her because she's a little kid, you know, competing against these like peak athletes, you know.
Yeah, she shouldn't win.
Yeah. So you're really rooting for her. So I get that they're now, in retrospect, I get what they were trying to set up. You know, they're trying to teach her the lesson that what's his face had to learn at the end, Pedro Pascal's character. But
so that's basically the theme. It's basically she learned that as a child. And then we see,
I don't think she did learn it as a child.
As a child in that scene. You know,
sure. Like, oh, Chris Pine teaching her as an adult.
Yeah, and then we had to watch Maxwell Lord somehow go through that same process throughout the whole.
Yeah, but
I don't understand.
Yeah, we definitely don't have to go chronologically because now we have to talk about the end. Because this is where all the thematic, you know, stuff is supposed to pay off. But I have to be honest, like, especially in light of even just this past year, but maybe like the past 3-4 years, it struck me as so hokey and unbelievable that she could just get everybody to renounce their wish by simply showing them the truth.
Right.
You know, that is, you know, something that maybe I would have found uplifting and, you know, cool, perhaps years past, and maybe I'm just too cynical now, but something about it just didn't quite click with me.
Well, it's like, are we really watching a movie where the main villain is wishes? I mean, they could have done something. That's what I was doing watching this, going, really? That's
so
wishes.
That's kind of a thing that's happened. I'm going to be a comic geek for a second. The stone was made by Dream in some versions, if you've read Sandman, which is cool. And it's kind of the like, fuck you gift that he would make. Maxwell Lord in the comics had a similar deal. It wasn't wishes, but he was kind of giving people what they wanted and mind controlling them, and became super powerful by mind controlling Superman to do his bidding. And Wonder Woman on like national, international, maybe even TV, used the lasso on him and was like,
cops are coming.
If I capture you and you get free, will you do this again? And he was basically like, yeah, but I'll do it better and I won't get caught. So she broke his neck.
Oh my God. Okay.
And got kicked out of the Justice League because Batman and Superman were like, we don't kill. And she was like,
don't break necks.
She was like, I save the world. That's what I do. So from the beginning, when they were like, Maxwell Lord is the villain in this one, and he's like, anything you want, you can have. I was like, oh shit, she's going to kill somebody. And that's why she goes into hiding. This is going to be cool or bleak. And then that did not happen. It would be like having Bane in a Batman movie and he doesn't break Batman's back. It would be like how he was in Batman and Robin.
Yeah, I just, something about, you know, it's like I can accept the magic of her lasso, like speaking through the airwaves or whatever. Fine, who cares? But it was just this idea that she could just like show him the truth and then he renounces all of his, you know, ambitions like forever. It just didn't feel real.
Yeah, she's all like, the earth is flat, bro. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. Let's go with that.
The movie was shot in 2018, and I wonder if it would have rung differently if we would have seen it when it was originally supposed to be released instead of being delayed literally 7 times.
I wonder. Yeah, I mean,
that's
maybe
true, but I don't know how this story, you know, would change on a Thursday from a Tuesday. You know,
you know,
crappy story.
I still think that even if that had been the case, or even if like somehow we had got to see this like the year after like the first Wonder Woman movie, for example, I still think that it wouldn't have been that great of a movie, because I think that even with the theme that they have, even if we could accept that like part at the end a little more easily, or, you know, if I could, I still think they developed the theme kind of weakly, kind of in a strange, not so clear, you know, way for the audience. I don't know.
No, I'm with you there. Cause like at first I didn't exactly understand. It's like, you know, there's the scene where Barbara and Wonder Woman are in the Diana are in the, that office and they're looking at the stone. They're like, oh, let's go out for dinner. But they both like make their wish before that. And then, you know, later on we see the introduction of Steve, which
Body Snatcher Steve.
Yeah, it's like I didn't get that. I was like, what's up with that? I did not like that at all. Place?
For the longest time, she seemed completely unbothered about the fact that like they had stolen this guy's life. Because
right.
Now
he has sex with that guy's body. And is fine with it.
Yeah, like, where'd that guy go? Did he get like blipped? Did he get the Thanos snap into some other?
He must have. I mean, he didn't remember her there at the end when he ran across.
Now,
her.
I was thinking when I watched it through the second time, I was like, well, I'm glad that they still had Chris Pine show up, because that's almost like if like they had kicked Chris Pine off the project and had to bring in another actor to fill the role, that's how they would have done it. Like, oh, I'm in his body, but I'm still me. But I'm glad that they did it the way they did, where you actually see Chris Pine. But it's just, really? I didn't care for it.
It's also weird because, like, if the stone is making walls appear, which is weird that we're like, yeah, walls work now sometimes.
Yeah.
And making cows appear out of thin air, like, unless those cows were originally rats or, like my partner said, that old man's friends who are now cows. Like, why is Steve in that guy's body? Like, what happened to that guy?
Right. If you can make everything else appear, why not just make Steve appear?
And Max Lord even like offers him when they're fighting in the White House. He's like, do you want to be a real boy? What do you wish for? So it seems like it could be possible.
I'm a real boy.
It felt like that as time went on, the stone got like less and less subtle with how it would grant wishes. Like suddenly, like first it's like, oh, like she wakes up and she takes off her like parachute pants or whatever, you know, and so she's, you know, she's got tight clothes on. Okay, that's like a little step towards what she wished for. But then like you have cows appearing out of thin air.
Yeah, and why is Max Lord meeting with some guy to talk about wanting a farm, you know? It's like, what exactly is going on? There's just so many.
He just wanted to take, you know, his cut from whatever.
Right. He wanted a percentage of everyone's wish power I don't know. It wasn't doing him any good. He's had bloodshot eyes and, you know, his face was falling apart. And I love Pedro Pascal because mainly Mandalorian and Red Viper from Game of Thrones. But I don't know if I care too much for his casting in this role.
He did seem a little hokey in his delivery.
It was very hokey.
I mean,
life
part of
is
that,
good,
I think...
but it could be better.
Hey, you're not Antonio Banderas, dude. Get the fuck out of here. You know? Yeah, I just, like I said, I like him, but I didn't believe him. He just, maybe he was playing the role enough that he felt hokey and ridiculous, but.
Like he bought his own stuff.
Yeah.
Like he bought into his.
Yeah, he believes what he was saying. But I don't know. Like, I'm not familiar with Maxwell Lord as a character. Like I said, I never even read Wonder Woman comics, so why would I know
I've read
much about
a lot of them.
Yeah. I was never into DC as much. So no shame. I mean, I just
no,
not familiar
no shame.
With the character. But yeah, I can see the Trump relation. But it didn't even
I think the comparison makes itself regardless of what they were intending to do in a way. And I don't want to get like deep into like political discourse, but are there any other like cinematic sins of this movie that you want to talk about before we get into the positives, Jessica?
Okay. So this ties into my two favorite things that were literally just pandering to me. One was I got like misty when they were flying through the fireworks.
That was cool. Yeah.
But also the fact that Steve is like, I want to fly one of those planes. And she's like, cool, let's a plane.
Let's hijack an F-16.
Crime.
And fly to Cairo. We don't know how to get there, but I'm sure we can work it out.
Yeah, there's Grand Theft Auto. What's it called with a plane? Come on.
And it wasn't until they were taking off that she was like, oh, by the way, I forgot that radar is a thing.
Oh, yeah. They're not going to see us. Oh, yeah. By the way.
I was so happy that they had the invisible jet. So that, I was like, "Aw, this scene doesn't make sense, but I'm happy."
Yeah, I that's one thing I never understood, the invisible jet. It's like, why?
She couldn't fly originally.
Right.
So the invisible jet was from Themyscira, which was originally called Paradise Island.
And she had it in the Super Friends, too. I remember it in the Super Friends. Yeah.
So speaking of her flying, that scene after she finally releases Steve, that was a cool scene. I like the way they did that. You know, she like renounces her wish and then Steve's like, I love you wherever you are. And then he dies and he doesn't die. He just turns back into the dude. The dude gets his body back, I guess.
That dude must have been so confused.
Yeah, he's like why?
Wasn't what? I on my futon? Different clothes?
What is going on?
Or whatever.
There's cows?
Yeah. But no, when she got angry and like launched herself up into the sky and then basically learned how to fly, that was cool. And that was kind of like her releasing her emotions and stuff and her loss over losing Steve. And I like that. But there was that one scene where she was like lassoing lightning.
I thought that was cool.
It was cool, but it made no sense.
Yeah, it's like how
she
do you
was
do
already flying.
Right.
Right. So why did she why? I don't know.
Yeah. I liked her using the lasso to like fly faster. And it makes no sense for her to lasso lightning, but if they're going with her being Zeus's daughter,
right.
Then I'm fine with that.
Yeah, and that's like something that was taken, I feel like, straight out of the pages of the comics that they wanted to work in. Because it seems like DC seems to have more of, they want to stay more in touch and in line with like the old school comics of the old days. And they don't want to stray too far in the movies, at least. But Marvel, I mean,
with Wonder Woman is that like she's had so many different origins.
Oh, yeah.
But the newest one, Rebirth, actually has her using the lasso on herself and realizing how many times she's quote unquote lied to herself and all of her origin stories have been untrue.
I do eat too much Ben and Jerry's.
Huh, interesting. So what does it give as her new origin story as the true one?
It's back to her being made from clay and electrified by Hera, I think.
Oh, okay. No, I see.
Or brought to life by Hera, not Zeus. There's also been the one where Ares sexually assaulted her mother. So Ares is her father. Sometimes Zeus is her father.
Jesus.
But.
No, Zeus.
Yeah. Currently, it's just she was clay. And I think it's actually all of the goddesses of Olympus, like, used their powers together to create her.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, you know, if we're talking about things that we liked, I mean, I did enjoy the action scenes, and I thought the one at the mall in the beginning was really fun.
Yeah, and those criminals in the beginning, like the older guy with like his white hair, he looked like he was a comic book character.
Like, he looked like he was a criminal from a 1980s like heist movie or something.
Right, exactly. With his hair sticking up and his glasses, and they all have those cartoony, there's the goods. You know, it was very cartoonish and very 80s, and I was like, right. And then the scene where you have all the girls doing the aerobics.
And yes.
All the old guys just standing there chewing their
lips. And over Pedro Pascal's monologue too. Yeah. Voiceover, it was perfect. But I really liked all the like lasso action we got in this one. I thought that was really cool. I actually really enjoyed Kristen Wiig's performance and her whole transformation.
I thought
I've always loved Kristen Wiig a lot, and I'm really glad to see that she's getting to show her chops more these days.
Yeah.
You know, and I just really believed her when she, you know, got to these turning points in her character when, you know, where she was like, first she was desperate enough to like make the wish, she had nothing to lose. And then like step by step, you see it, you know, affecting her and her like enjoying this new chapter in her life. And then to the point where she's like, no, that's crazy, Doc. I'm not going to destroy the stone. And, you know, then she becomes her enemy. And if you notice at the very end, it was doing this montage of all the people around the world saying, I renounce my wish. Mm. But she didn't say that.
But she didn't look like the cheetah anymore. Which
true, but that was not her wish.
Yeah, they didn't actually say that. But
it had
made
to
me
have
wonder
been...
if they just wanted to skimp on the animation.
Yeah, possibly. I read it as because she had already made her wish. And then Pedro Pascal was asking her what else she wanted, that whole scene, right, where she's like, I don't want to be like anybody else anymore. I want to be an apex predator. So he must have, like, taken something. It was when he was taking the many, many wishes from all the people, right? Like, when he was broadcasting.
Her.
And he was like, give her your rage, give her your prowess, right? So whatever he did there must have turned her into, you know, full-on cheetah.
Yeah. I also don't like the way they portrayed White House security. Is it really that easy? Is it really that easy? Just boom, here I am. You know, there's so many scenes where they just showed up and there's no sirens, there's no alarms, there's no Secret Service agents going, hey, you know.
All you need is a guy who wants to give you a tour of all the busts in the White House.
Exactly.
You just slip into the Oval Office real easily after that.
Not a problem.
Okay, that guy actually ties into my theory that Diana and Barbara were supposed to be a couple and it got changed, because if you think about it, they have a meet cute, they have a date.
They do.
And then she, oh, and then Diana rescues her.
Did you say meet cute?
Yes.
Yeah. A meet cute is a story writing term, particularly for like romantic comedies, which is like the first time the romantic leads meet. And it's usually like some exciting or like embarrassing situation that's very memorable and very cute. So it's called a meet cute.
Wow. Carry on.
And then when she rescues her, she carries her to safety. And then Steve comes back and he's like, oh, I'm Diana's old friend. And she's like, I'm Diana's new friend. Then when she meets that guy, she's like, this is my colleague, not her friend.
Oh.
Making it a differentiation.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So I was like, we are either doing some queer baiting or something going on here. Maybe they weren't allowed to make them a couple, but she very much seems woman scorn-y.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if like the first draft of the script was like that and then the studio ended up having him change it or something like
that. Yeah, because my first watch through, I didn't really understand. It's like, why does Barbara hate Diana? You know, it's like she's like, oh, here's a stone. Let's make a wish. Ha ha ha. And then she's like, I hate you. It's like, where'd that come from? I didn't see it coming. And then through the second watch through, it was kind of explained, but not really well, because that's the way they wrote this movie.
I mean, so I'm bi and I'm married to a straight man, and he doesn't often pick up on like
your subtle jokes,
queer things in cinema. But when they were having dinner together, he just looked at me and went, oh, they're gay. I was like,
did he catch it before you did? Or you're like, yeah, no shit.
No, no, the whole time I was like, oh, this is a date. And he was like, they're totally flirting. They're gay for each other. And I was like, okay, it's not just me.
I mean, honestly, if I was either Gal Gadot or Kristen Wiig and they were flirting with each other, I don't know who I'd rather be because I love them both. I have a crush on Kristen Wiig, probably a little more than Gal Gadot.
Interesting. She is hilarious. But, you know, I felt very much like, you know, when she drops the papers and then Diane is the only one who stops to help her. I was like, oh, my God, this is a freaking meet cute. It's like, yeah, I knew it. You know,
now I'm going to watch movies and be going, meet cute, meet cute. I'll be like, I'm jumping up, meet cute. And everyone else will be like, what?
Dude,
I learned a term.
Just watch the first 20 minutes of like five different romantic comedies and you'll see five different.
I'll see the meet. I've never heard that term before. That's funny.
Yeah, it's a technical term.
Yeah, I know, I'm not good with books and
words. For us writers type. Yeah, so I think that there were occasionally gaps in the story logic too. Which I think is a forgivable sin if the movie is good enough and entertaining enough, which this movie, from my score of 6, I'm saying was not. But like, for example, when they're chasing Max Lord in, I think it was Egypt, right? And they're in that car chase.
I had a lot of feelings about that.
There was some good stuff. But then like, first, like, okay, at a certain point, she's pushing one of those tank trucks sideways down the road at like 70 miles an hour, right, until it crashed into the thing. So you expect me to believe that after that no, but listen, so you expect me to believe that she can do that, but then when she's hanging onto the side of that one and the other one comes into sideswiper, that she's having trouble pushing on it with her legs, like that didn't quite track for me,
right?
You know, maybe like I get that she was slowly like losing her powers, but they did not develop that was happening. Like happening in that moment. Does that make sense?
It does make total sense. Now that you say that, I do see the disparity between the two scenes because it was completely different. Because, I mean, I push trucks sideways down the road all the time as my job. But, you know, it is weird that she could do that, but then couldn't go meh and push them apart from each other using the same fantastic thighs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, Jessica, am I nitpicking too much or what do you think?
I actually thought that it was a very cool way to show it, not actually show you she was losing her powers, but to give you a sense of like, what's going on first when she gets wounded from the bullet.
That's true. That happened.
And then the second thing that I really noticed, because I'm oblivious sometimes, was when she drops the lasso, which I don't know when she got it back because it was attached to like a rocket.
Oh yeah, like 3 times in the movie.
It's a rocket boomerang, duh.
But that was when I was like, "What's going on with her? She's bad at her job right now." But I'm not Middle Eastern, so I'm not really the right person to talk about this, but I do want to draw attention to the fact that there was a little bit of an ado made about Gal Gadot being an IDF veteran and outspoken in support of the Israeli army, playing a character who beats up basically faceless, nameless Arabs. And the optics of that. And
is that one of those separate the artist from the art sort of things, or
I think maybe, but also Wonder Woman, the first one, was banned in Lebanon specifically because of her.
And then they carried it on in the second movie.
Specifically because she's Israeli, right? Or
yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Or because she was in the IDF, I think.
She was in the IDF, got it. Yeah.
So I saw a couple of people saying that, like, it would have been more in vain with an 80s movie if he had gone to Russia for the oil and been more like, Russia is bad and the U.S. is enemy. And they could have just skirted that whole thing.
Yeah, because we weren't at war with brown people until the 90s. That's true. It was the Russians before that. Cold War. Hello, people.
Well, you know, we got some Cold War stuff and the nuclear stuff.
You had a Doctor Strangelove ending, but averted.
Yeah, at the last second, it vanished. Yeah. So, I mean, the action sequences were fun, and I really enjoyed the fight sequence with her in the armor against the, you know, fully cheated up Kristen Wiig there at the end. And
cat fighting a bird. It was cute.
Yeah, bird, exactly.
Did you say meet cute? Meet cute?
You know,
there's second date.
Yeah.
I think my favorite fight in the whole thing was the White House fight because it showed so much of both of their characters. Like, it shows their strength and that Diane is losing hers, but also, like, Barbara's running around causing chaos, hurting everybody, and Diana's spending half her time fighting Barbara and the other half protecting people.
Right.
Yeah. It like to the point where like she was bashing that guy and she grabbed his neck to keep his head from getting bashed and then like gently laid him down on the floor as they tumbled to the floor. Right. She was taking pains to keep, you know, her from murdering innocent people.
Yeah. And that keeps in line with, you know, Diana's, you know, approach towards battle. It's like, you know, you fight people to create peace. Well, sometimes you got to kick them, but then, you know, don't break their neck.
Yeah. Try to, you know, and avoid collateral damage, basically. Right. So,
yeah.
So that was cool. And I liked how Steve had a role to play in part because, you know, she was kind of losing her powers. It's like she gets shot and then he's like, nope. And he comes with the silver tray or whatever it was. And they drag her to the door. So like he actually had some stuff to do alongside her, which I thought was cool. And I do really like Chris Pine.
Steve's no punk. Like a lot of times he's really significant in the movies and in the comics. And I like that he gets to do cool things, even though he probably won't anymore.
Yeah. I don't see how.
I don't see how they can really keep bringing him back again and again.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that fight was so good narratively that I hated the conversation they had afterwards. It felt so pointless.
Which conversation is that again?
When she's like, what have you given up? What are you giving up? Like, you don't have strength. Well, you don't have humanity. It just felt very like, well, from my perspective, the Jedi are evil. Yeah. Like,
I think part of the reason that didn't quite work is because of the, let's just say the faulty way that they developed this theme. Because from Barbara's point of view, until this moment in the White House, she hasn't really done anything, quote unquote, bad or evil, right? Yeah. She decides to take that step to prevent what she sees as Wonder Woman taking away this incredible thing that she's finally been able to get in her life, right? And so the fact that they had that, I think they could have had basically the same plots, more or less, and developed this theme in a better way that would have made the movie more satisfying, at least for me. But because of the way that they did it and they developed certain points, I agree that conversation didn't quite have the bite that it could have. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for me, it just felt like, you know, they always say show, not tell. And that felt like we were shown and then told.
Right. Like you didn't you're right. Absolutely right.
Like they both acted the hell out of it. And yes, Barbara was totally right. But she's like, Diana,
now we will tell you the subtext with our words.
Exactly. Yeah.
She's like, you have everything. And Diana does. She's super privileged. And she's like telling people, stop trying, stay in your place.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Barbara's right to be pissed.
You know, and that's the feeling that I got so much at the end, you know, where, yes, you can talk about the bad way that Max Lord was going about it and all this stuff. But like when she's communicating with all the people around the world with that technology in her rope. Right. And she's saying, no, you have to renounce your wish to save the world. And I think that there is perhaps an unintended, but definitely, I think, you know, there is a slightly toxic reading of that message, you know, which is that, you know, don't aspire to more. And again, they could have somehow brought it back to you have to do it the right way without hurting people or, you know, whatever it is. But they didn't do that.
or something.
They just, like, yeah.
Don't cheat. Well, it's like they mentioned that, you know, I don't know if they mentioned the stone or exactly what it was, but they're like, yeah, every time this has happened before, these civilizations have, you know, been reduced to rubble. And that's basically, I think, part of the theme where it's like all these people are making wishes and it's most about themselves and not about other people. And, you know, when you're doing that and just being self-centered, it's just going to build up and build up and then crumble down. So, you know, they blame stone on the loss of certain civilizations through.
Yeah. See, I think it was a really super interesting idea that they explored with the stone in terms of, you know, if you just suddenly give everybody like these wishes with, you know, these unintended consequences as well, that can be really disruptive. But at the same time, the way they developed it, it was like, oh, well, we can't trust the rabble, you know.
Yeah. That's what I got too.
To try and better their lives, we have to leave it in the hands of the capable special people at the top. And I think that is a reading of the movie that you can make. I don't think that's what was intended, but it kind of occurred to me, and I hate that. And so I think that that's partially, you know, rightly or wrongly, why I don't enjoy the movie more, or, you know, even a little bit more. So.
You could have just left it at a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know what I was I don't know what turn of phrase I was looking for, but I didn't quite get there.
I bet you wish you enjoyed the movie more. Yeah. One thing, like, I just thought of as y'all were talking the last couple minutes, it's like, you know, from the beginning of the movie towards the end of the movie, Diana never really changed, I don't feel. It's not like she learned something from the movie. It's basically they all dealt with this one thing and, oh, we make a wish. Oh, that was bad. And then, but I just don't feel there was a character progression. You know, I don't feel that like in the next movie, if there is one, it's like, oh, well, now she learned that. So she's changed. I just didn't see it. So if y'all saw it, let's talk about it.
Well, there's definitely some character change from the end of this movie to the beginning of what Batman versus Superman, when she comes in. But I don't understand.
Oh, so that's what happens next on the timelines, Batman versus Superman.
Well, I mean, that happens in like 2012 or something. This was 1984. So, you know.
Yeah, that's one thing I wasn't thinking about, you know, her role in that movie and who her character was. So maybe I should need to watch that again.
I think her change is kind of subtle. Her process in this is kind of about grieving. And I know a lot of people were saying that it's ridiculous that she's hung up over a guy that she knew for like a month, 60 years ago.
But that. Yeah.
She lives forever.
Yeah. And it was a month, 60 years ago.
But also she's like thousands of years old.
Right. Yeah.
So
she finally had this great, wonderful thing in her life and it was ripped away from her prematurely, you know?
And there's, I mean, I'm a therapist. There's no timeline on grief. So, and I had wondered, like, why isn't she flying? Because it seemed like she learned how to do that in her fight against Ares. But if she really does associate flying with Steve, then it was kind of nice to, like, take that, let go of Steve, be at peace with him, and come into her own with, like, flying is her connection to him now.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, she was thinking of his words where he was telling her about flying,
right,
joining with the air and all this stuff. And I did think that was a beautiful moment, and I did love that whole sequence, like you said, Jess.
Yeah.
We know that Alistair, the little boy, who Maxwell Lord did not care about until the very end, did not renounce his wish that his
dad would... Did you see his face every time the kid walked in the room? It's like, hey! You know? So,
yeah, but he was also like, oh, god damn it, my kid is here. Hey, yeah. Son!
he's went over the top trying to be, hey, I'm... been thinking about you all day. What's your name? Gotcha. Okay. Come on, Bobby.
So he didn't renounce his wish. I doubt Coffee Guy renounced his wish because I doubt he knew it had anything to do with anything.
Okay. Who's right. Coffee? Who's Coffee Guy?
The guy who wished for coffee at the very beginning when they were talking about the stone. You remember?
The very first guy to make a wish. So I wish I had a cup of coffee.
And if you notice, they did a really slick like establishing of the rules of the stone there. Because
oh,
after
right. Now the guy comes in and says, hey, I got this extra coffee. Anybody want one?
Yeah.
Hey. Okay.
But then after he takes a drink, you hear in the background, it's like, oh, burn my tongue. It's hot. So he lost his ability to enjoy the coffee that he just got.
So, okay. What did he lose? What did he lose by getting the coffee?
Tongue. It takes as much as it gives.
Okay. So if he renounces wish, then what happens?
His tongue is on.
I mean, it's been a couple of days. His tongue is flying.
But like if everybody needed to renounce the wish to destroy the stone, that's two people we know who didn't.
Right. So the stone is still alive and well.
The stone is still in Max Lord.
Well, no, he renounced his wish. Still. So maybe it reconstituted.
Oh, maybe the stone is back.
Or something.
So it's a couple grains of sand.
Maybe it's just very small.
Yeah. Very small. So now everybody that stands on a certain part of the ground.
Sand is kind of like a very small rock.
Wish. Yeah. So I don't know.
It gets everywhere. You will not pay me to believe that Barbara Minerva renounced her wish. Like,
oh no, she didn't.
Especially if her whole thing was that, like, she lost her connection to her humanity. You could probably show her terrible atrocities and she'd be like, fuck you, got mine.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I believe
I can lift 700 pounds in a deadlift.
That scene was funny because she puts those weights over her head and you could see the huge dudes in the background going, like,
go, wow. And then she's like, all right, then.
And she was in like, you know, the 80s, like leotard at the gym. Yeah. So fun. Yeah. I mean, so, okay. So are there any other shining moments that you really did enjoy in this movie? Jess first? Dark.
I still like I said, Chris Pine. His scene when he was trying on all the different clothes, you know.
I think you've got a crush on Chris Pine, too, if I'm being honest.
He's cute. He's, I don't know.
Who doesn't, though? I mean, I'll admit it.
His head's got a weird shape to it. But
we got some nice Chris Pine arms during that scene.
Oh, I'll have to watch it again. But no, I just thought his character, the way he was portrayed, was funny. He was the comedic relief throughout the movie. And I kind of felt like you mentioned in the White House scene, it's like, yeah, he was there because what else is he going to do? But I just kind of felt, aside from him showing up as a unrequited love, what's the point? You know, it's not like he's as strong as anyone there. He just grabbed a metal.
Well, I think the point was that Diana had to learn to let him go in order to,
right.
You know.
Yeah, he was a plot device, basically, but he was a funny one, and he made me laugh. But I still, like Jessica said, he's a body snatcher, and that's weird.
That didn't bother them at all.
Yeah.
There's a lot of funky consent issues there, and it's, I don't like it.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, when he's going to the bathroom, he looks down going, huh. Either he's happy or not, you know, that could have been a scene, but, you know, it's just, you're in a different body just because she sees you one way. I don't know.
It was strange that, yeah, it was. And it, you know, it also makes me wonder what the script looked like a couple, you know, drafts ago or something. But I guess we'll never know. He is a very, he's such a grounded character though. And Chris Pine is so good at playing that, but like in a charming, like down to earth kind of way, you know? And so I think that in that sense, he's a great ally for Diana to have as not a foil in like a nemesis type sense, but a foil in to just her, you know, personality and nature as like, you know, a superhuman being basically. You know, he kind of does bring her back down to earth, despite the fact that he's a pilot and he literally takes her into the sky. So maybe I'm getting some metaphors mixed up here. But I did really enjoy, after the insanity of the plane heist that they obviously did not think through. I would have expected more from Diana on that count. But I really enjoyed the whole fireworks like sequence where they're.
Well, nobody got hurt. So it doesn't care if we break laws as long as no one got hurt, right?
I started wondering if the stone was making her dumber. Or if she was like blinded by the D because she was so happy to have him back.
There is right? a case to be made for any of them.
That's funny.
But so, yeah, I mean, you know, the spectacle of the movie was great. I guess I'll say that. And there were some fun and heartfelt moments. And I really did dig Kristen Wiig's character arc. Mm-hmm. I thought that her performance was like, I just really enjoyed it. You know, I just really believed it, you know, hardcore.
Mm-hmm. I believed her as much as I didn't believe Pedro Pascal. It's like I felt opposite about the two of them.
Is that not his real accent then?
I don't know.
I mean, I've heard him in Game of Thrones and freaking The Mandalorian, but that doesn't mean anything, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if, I mean, it sounds, if that is his accent, and I don't want to be racist at all, but, you know, it sounded like he was trying to pull off Antonio Banderas.
He was just an over-the-top salesman about it.
Yeah, it didn't seem just the way he delivered. Life is good, but it can be better. You know, it didn't sound
inauthentic to me. He just sounded over the top, like showman is what he sounded
right.
Like.
Yeah. He breaks out on that huge smile with his eyes real big, and it's like he is delivering it like a showman. And I honestly don't know what his natural speaking voice or accent is, because I've seen him in three completely different roles.
The parts of his performance that I think I enjoyed the most was when the mask slipped. You know, there's a scene where he's in an elevator looking at mail or something, and he's like, smile to like, oh, and he kind of slumps, you know. And then there's a couple times, you know, when he's talking to his son, that the mask kind of, you know, slips or he tosses it aside. But like, those are I feel like there should have been a little tiny bit more of that. Like, we should have given him a couple of moments to, like, you know, to retreat into his real self before he like picks up steam as like, you know, the super duper bad guy or whatever. I don't know. What's your take on this character and what I'm talking about, Jessica?
To what you said, I loved the horror he experiences when his son makes a wish. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really well done.
Yeah.
But from what I gathered and from a little bit of what I've read about it, was that, I don't know if this was intentional, but how it was coming across to a lot of people of color specifically was that he was trying to hide his race, hence the changing his last name, the coloring his hair. So he might have been altering his accent in public, trying to hide it, and I've known people who did this who didn't want to be thought of as Latino. They would say that they were Spanish. So it might have been, given that we saw like the way he was made fun of for like eating a tamale as a kid.
Yeah.
It could have been a like, white people are successful. I'm going to look white. I'm going to be white.
And I think that's a thing a lot of people go through.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least a thought that a lot of people have. And, you know, I'm white. So just to make that clear to our listeners. So I don't have the firsthand experience, you know, of a person of color. But I think that it's just so obvious that you have to conform to succeed and to climb the corporate ladder a lot of times. That doesn't seem controversial to me, at least.
Yeah, there's a very cool thing in the Ms. Marvel comics in the first trade where when she first gets her powers, she actually transforms into a tall blonde woman.
Yes, I've read it. I love that. I love the Ms. Marvel series of comics.
And then has to like be able to accept herself as like, wait, I can look like me and also be a superhero.
Yeah, that was her like instinctual way to appear in her superhero form, I guess, right at the very beginning. That's such a great series. I really love that one. I can't wait for the Ms. Marvel show that's coming out. God knows when. But okay. So, I mean, I think we've covered a lot of ground. Is there anything else from your notes, Jessica, that you're burning to get out here and talk about?
Before you fell asleep.
Sure. I'll fly through some things. Oh, the very opening with the Amazons reminded me of Baba Yetu from Civ. I did not like how much child endangerment this was because I don't find children interesting. Sorry to all my nieces and nephews who are not listening to this.
Oh, I have two kids and I'm right there with you.
But it was cool with the mall scene that we had a kid dressed just like Drew Barrymore from E.T. and another kid who was probably supposed to be Star Blossom, who is one of Wonder Woman's kid friends from a Gail Simone run.
Oh.
The little girl with glasses who like winks at her.
Who she like threw into the teddy bear or whatever. Yeah. Get her away. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that's a callback that I wouldn't pick up because, like I said, I've never just gotten into the comics and stuff. So when they're doing, like you said, the fan service moments that you really liked, a lot of that stuff I wouldn't really pick up on because I'm a kind of a third string Wonder Woman fan rather than you seem to be an aficionado, Jessica.
And instead, you're just like, why are we spending so much time with this child?
there was a lot of child endangerment, though. That's for sure.
Yeah.
One thing you mentioned earlier about when Alistair made his wish for his father, everyone else's wishes kind of came true pretty quick. But when he made his wish, he wanted his dad back, wanted his dad around, like nothing happened until another 45 minutes.
He already made his wish before then, so that wasn't a wish that came true. So he wished for his father's greatness. Do you remember that? And then, no. And then his dad recoils, and he's like, no!
Okay.
Yeah.
So the kid wishes for greatness.
For his dad.
Gets his heart broken. Well, he wants to be great like his dad. And then,
no, he said he wants his dad to be great.
Yeah.
Because his dad was like, my greatness is your greatness.
Right. Okay. But yeah, but what he loses basically is his father. He starts to lose him.
So then after he gets his heart ripped out, he later wishes for his dad to come back and nothing happens because he already used up his wish because, you know, fuck kids anyway. And then finally, Max Lord realizes he's being a total bastard at the end of the movie and chooses to renounce his wish for his son. As if we think he's actually going to care about him from then on. You know, like, oh, now I'm a good dad.
Maybe Wonder Woman will kill him in the future.
I thought they constructed him as an interesting villain. And I like the idea of, like, you know, having villains, you know, quote unquote villains with relatable backstories and things. And they, you know, you can kind of empathize, if not condone the things that they do. But again, the hokiness of it that I found to be slightly off-putting was like, oh, she just shows him the truth and therefore he renounces all of his ways. Like, I thought Pedro Pascal did a great job, but I feel like it could have been written a little bit better, or maybe I'm just being too hard on the movie. On this,
I don't think you are, because we all saw the same movie. And I agree.
Yeah, like that there wasn't like a final big CGI fight with him, though.
Right.
Because he could have used their wishes to like give himself immortality or soup himself up. Because in some renditions of Maxwell Lord, he is immortal because he found the Lazarus pit and it's a whole thing. But I liked that they didn't end that way because part of Diana's deal is that she can talk people down from violence. So I liked seeing that side of her.
Yeah, I thought it was an appropriate way for her to resolve things, but the movie just had all these other problems that it was, you know, wasn't quite as cathartic as I think it could have been, at least for me. Okay.
I wrote, this is going to be a wild rerun. And I hope that she's not so powerful now that they have to constantly nerf her. Yeah. In future appearances, like they kind of did in this time. And if she's like how a lot of times with Superman, they take his power away. I hope they don't start doing that to her.
Yeah. Every single movie doesn't need to be like, oh, you're losing some power. So how are you going to deal with this? Like a normal person. I don't know.
I find it to be a really tired plot device, frankly, that I just, I agree totally. So Jess, Dark Nerd, do you have any other things you were burning to discuss before we get into final thoughts?
I also fell asleep through my second watch through. But it was only like 15 minutes and it was on the end, which kind of sucked. So I didn't miss
You missed the
much.
Linda Carter thing?
Oh, no. I woke up for the Linda Carter thing and I was actually planning on bringing that up. Let's talk about
please
Linda Carter. So how did we feel about that?
Clearly
scene?
They made it so that she was Asteria, the woman who, or the warrior who stayed behind to let the other Amazons escape, blah, blah, blah. And I think it was just a way for them to squeeze in Linda Carter. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's like, what are they trying to do with that? It's not their...
against it. I have nothing. I feel like it should have been... I feel like they tried too hard in a way, mm-hmm. because it literally has nothing to do with anything else. Like, it's... because maybe I'm spoiled by what the MCU does, or maybe my expectations have been set, because whenever they have a mid-credit or post-credit scene, it always... tends to tie into something else.
Well, that's what people are talking about until the next movie, you know.
Just not always. I don't know. I thought it was fine. I enjoyed it. I didn't love it, though.
It was fine, but Linda Carter, she always played Diana. Has she ever played Asteria? Has she ever played Diana's mom? It's just like, why are they bringing her?
It was just a way to put her in the movie.
Yeah, it was just fan service is all it is.
She plays the president on Supergirl.
Oh,
that's right.
So she's Wonder Woman and the president. Interesting. Wonder what she'd have wished for.
I gasped and was really excited when I saw her. Like, I was fangirl squealing. And the second time, I did not like when she winked at the camera.
Yeah.
I was like, I've been doing this a long time.
Much. Yeah.
Yeah,
I actually would have liked it more if she didn't wink at the camera. They could have just done like a shot of her smirking as she walked away or something like that.
Yeah, because she turns around and says whatever she says. And I'm like, ah, and then she winks. It's like, oh, I see what you're doing.
But I am not a Linda Carter hater. I feel like maybe mom is making me out of such. I always watched her Wonder Woman show when I was a kid. Like, that was one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, and that's what I talked about on our Marvel versus Star Wars crossover. You know, we grew up with Spider-Man and the Incredible Hulk and Wonder Woman and all these characters that we've seen rebooted time and time and time again. And here we are with another Wonder Woman. And then it's like, here's another Wonder Woman at the end of this Wonder Woman who's a different Wonder Woman but the same Wonder Woman. Hooray! It's like, wait,
isn't that... Isn't that what the next Spider-Man movie is going to be, though?
No, that's what Tenet's about. That's what Tenet's about. We're going to talk about that. God.
Yeah. Have you seen Tenet, Jessica?
No.
Okay. Yeah. Do you like Christopher Nolan movies?
Yes, but I don't like the way he treats women in his movies.
Oh, well, then you're going to remain the same opinion for Tenet, I would say.
I mean, have you seen Inception on acid?
No.
Okay. Well, then you might want to do that first, and that'll be a good warm up for what you're about to see.
And Tenet, yeah. We'll have to do that episode later. Okay, but
if you're sober, you're wrong.
So I'm gonna have to have a drink after this, guys. Okay. So let's do final thoughts.
I just mentioned Tenet. Now he's fiending.
Final thoughts for Wonder Woman 1984. Let's start with the Dark Nerd. And what are your final thoughts on this movie?
Action sequences were great. They were done well. It was a good, like I said, it was a beautiful movie. There was a couple scenes that were great, but overall, I think the writing just kind of fell off. And I was not a fan of the quote unquote villain. I liked Cheetah. Kristen Wiig, but I didn't care much for Maxwell Lord. I just didn't feel he was compelling, and the wishes. I don't know. It's like, oh, in the next movie, Wonder Woman's going to go to war against jealousy. Yay. It's like, I don't, it didn't nail it home for me. And that's why I gave it a 6. It was good to watch once. I didn't want to watch it a second time, but I had to figure out what I was going to say about it. It just didn't deliver what I was hoping it would.
Yeah. All right. Jessica, what are your final thoughts on this film?
I really found parts of it beautiful, and I loved a lot of the action, but the theme just not making sense or being muddled. If you want to view it as muddled or bonkers or downright upsetting, like, it could be any of those things, led to some very bizarre characterization and like Diana acting completely out of character. And it when it made some weird choices and it made it hard for me to love the movie as much as I really wanted to. And yeah, I had to watch it twice to figure out exactly how I felt about it. And I don't like it. I don't hate it. But I'm probably not going to watch it again. And that's sad because I really love Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Given a chance to watch three Wonder Woman movies in a row, I'd watch the first one three times, you know, before watching that one, then this one.
Yeah. You know, I think that actually it's pretty serviceable average superhero film. And I've just I think that I just have greater expectations now, particularly for a Wonder Woman film. That said, this movie is still probably better than most of the DC Comics movies that have been made, with, you know, with probably a couple exceptions.
For sure.
I mean, I think probably my top three like DC Comics movies are probably Shazam, the first Wonder Woman movie, and maybe Man of Steel. Maybe
Dark Knight's not in there anywhere.
To think about.
That's not.
Well, that's not. That's the previous generation. That's not like a current generation of films. But Dark Knight for sure. Like, I mean, yeah, definitely.
I would replace Man of Steel with Harley Quinn, but otherwise we would have the same.
I like that one too. That one's in my top five. For
so,
sure.
So how about this? How about the way they wrote the story? It's like they were trying to touch a nerve, you know, by teaching humanity a lesson that what they wish for needs to be something that isn't so self-centered, and, you know, maybe they need to think about other people more. And since this movie was shot in 2018 and we all just lived, I mean, today is, what's today? The 27th of December, 2020. We have not seen any part of people thinking about other people for a good 10 months now. This year has just been a mess. So maybe that's the only thing that would have made this movie better had it come out last year, you know, because after seeing what's been going on in 2020, I mean, that's really the only thing I can think of that would change, that maybe they were trying to sell with the theme of this movie that makes it fall all the more flat today.
I think it contributes, but that's not the whole story. I think that I still would have found the movie problematic, you know, if I had seen it 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, I think.
And but, there you have it, folks. This movie sucks any year.
I mean, I you know, I find myself real disappointed after watching this movie because I really wanted to love it. Like, I loved the first one. And I felt like even tonally, it was all over the place. You know, it was a certain tone here, a totally different tone here. And then you have like
another thing, too. It's like it's Wonder Woman 1984. OK, so it takes place in 1984. And we have right after we're introduced to 1984 at current times in the movie, they really push the 1984 thing for 5 minutes. And then after that, it doesn't feel at all like it's 1984.
You know. Well, they didn't do all the flashy, like, movie things like, oh, that guy's wearing a hot pink shirt and he's got a headband on. And like
what I'm saying is I would rather see 2.5 hours of leotards. OK.
OK. right. Fair enough, I guess.
Some of Diana's outfits were directly taken from things that Linda Carter wore as Diana.
Oh, really?
Oh, that's awesome. Kind of neat. Yeah, I think the, you know, visually the movie is really good. I mean, the spectacle and the action and stuff, that was all great. And as we talked about at length, you know, there's some gems in this movie, you know, some scenes and sequences and things. But and, you know, if, for me, like Kristen Wiig's performance was just like makes me love her all the more. Nice. But, it, you know, at the end of the day, I think I'm just as disappointed as you two. Perhaps a little less disappointed than Jessica, given that you know all the comic stuff, perhaps. Right. But yeah, I think that if you're a big Wonder Woman fan, it's probably worth watching once. But otherwise, you know, I'm not gonna pressure anybody to you know, edge other things out of your, you know, list to watch this first. So, get to it when you get to it, I guess.
Yeah, it's like I said, December 27th, 2020, and I've never seen Jaws. And that's one of those movies when you say that, people are like, you've never seen Jaws? This is not going to be one of those movies. Okay, this is not one of the, you've never seen Wonder Woman 1984? You know, so that's the kind of movies we're looking for, you know, something that really changes a decade and you know, says something and people can really relate to it. And this movie, sadly, didn't do any of that. So it's not
anyone's high bar for movies.
It is kind of a high bar, but it did make me think of something interesting. Do you think that this movie could have been any better if it had been set in the present day? I actually think it would have, they would have had to totally change what it was all about in that case, just because of current events. What's your guys' take on that? Just real briefly.
We talk in like 2016.
It happened after year 2020.
Yeah, not 2020. Like, let's say 2019. If it happened in 2019. Like
after the last, you know, Batman, Superman, Justice League movie or whatever.
Oh, you mean it took place after those movies?
Like, if it had, do you think that could have made... I tend to think that it would have been more problematic to do the same thing that they did in this movie.
I don't know, because it's all about wishing, so that can happen whenever, and Steve comes back from the dead to live in someone else's body and have sex with Gal Gadot, so...
That could happen whenever, yeah.
That's a dream come true, you know? But I don't know. It's... I don't see how the time would really change. Like I said, unless... we relate the average person thinking about themselves versus 2020. You know, I think this story would probably.
I just think that it would have felt like more overtly political if they had tried to do the same plot in like present day. What do you think, Jessica? Am I reaching?
No, I think I see what you're saying. And I think it was already fairly political. I don't know if they always knew what political statements they wanted to make.
Fair.
If they were intentionally making political statements. But more to the idea of the fact that the Justice League is a thing now, I think they would have the same problem that a lot of shows that the MCU has. You have to explain why the other heroes aren't getting involved.
Right.
Like, where's her backup?
Especially when literally the whole world falls into chaos, right? Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Like, where's... And Diana is kind of the only one of the Justice League who could solve it in the way that she did. Like, she is the one who would solve that problem.
True.
But Superman and definitely Batman would still show up.
And that's the thing, too. I don't really understand why it would make a difference if it happened in current day or in 1984, because Batman and Superman still existed in 1984.
They were just babies.
Well, they were just little babies.
Wee babes? I don't think they were that young. I was born in 78 and I'm kick-ass.
Well,
I think they're supposed to be a little bit older than me, and I was born in 1984.
Yeah, no, I think she's right. Okay, well, this has been a
I thought Batman's parents were murdered like in the 70s.
Well, it depends on what version of Batman you're talking about. You know,
For
which generation? I mean, if he's supposed... Okay, so...
Well, can't the Flash... Where's the Flash?
If Ben Affleck Batman...
Five.
Supposed
How
to
much
be...
is 5-year-old Batman going to do?
Kick ass?
I guess. Well, on that happy note, this has been a fun conversation about a movie that wasn't as fun as this conversation.
Right. Wait, we can still go another hour. Let's see if we can. Let's see if we can talk about this movie as long as it lasts.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't think we can.
The studio did want her to cut one of the two opening scenes, and she, Patty Jenkins, who directed it, and she railed against it, and I guess won, because, you know, the movie is pretty long, to your point, and they were saying, you gotta either cut the Themyscira stuff, or you gotta cut the other opening scene at the mall, and she stuck to her guns, and I think that the movie is better for that. I can't imagine what a mess this movie would be without the beginning scene with the Amazons.
Okay. Yeah, I actually wondered if that was added in later, because they were like, you need a theme. Just add a theme. pain.
Yeah.
Okay, on okay. that real quick, Will, you're more in tune with Hollywood and how they create movies. I am sick and tired of hearing about, let's cut this 47-second scene from the movie, or let's cut this 3-minute scene from the movie because it's going to ruin the movie. Is it really? I mean, when I go to the movies, I want to see a movie that sucks me in and draws me in, and I don't care if it's 2 hours and 27 minutes versus 2 hours and 31 minutes.
It really depends.
Those extra 4 minutes really ruined it for me. I never got that. I want more.
It really depends.
See the extra scenes, unless it's like, you know, they're all, you know, like singing and dancing together, being something stupid.
Well, part of it. So sometimes it's that, like, when the director is putting it together in post with the editor, it'll be like, oh, wait, this scene really doesn't work the way we thought it would. We got to get rid of that. Other times, you know, the studio or is constantly under the pressure of when they release theatrically. The longer the movie is, the more film they have to pay for to print the film on, to print the movie onto, to be distributed to however many thousands of movie theaters there are in the world. And so, you know, if you can cut 1 minute from a film, that can save you like $1 million. You know, I'm just pulling some numbers out of thin air, but when you're talking about a movie with wide release, little things add up. And so at that point, it becomes about the filmmakers. Power within Hollywood, like how established they are and how well they're able to convince the people at the studio that they deal with that the scene is essential. So I think that those are probably the two biggest things that it boils down to.
Plus, the shorter a movie is, the more screenings you can have of it to get
exactly. Exactly.
True.
You know, whereas the only reason I know you wanted Endgame to be 6.5 hours long, but the only reason the only reason that movie wasn't shorter than it was is because it was such a big event for Marvel and everything that they had been building up.
Yeah, I've already watched 22 movies to get here. I've spent 10 years of my life, you know, spending money on you guys. Give me what I want.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you, listeners, for listening to this episode of Mecha Dragon. And thank you, Jessica, for coming back onto the show to talk about Wonder Woman with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm always down to talk about Wonder Woman or Star Wars or whatever nerdy things you want to talk about.
Well, we probably won't be talking about Wonder Woman for a while.
Yeah, you know, that's fair.
Well, question, Jessica. Are you planning to watch the WandaVision show that's coming out next month?
Yes, I'm so excited.
Well, we're going to be covering it episode by episode, so you can consider this an open invitation if you want to come chat about that at any point.
Yeah, and maybe Wanda Woman will show up.
But
I would love to come back.
Okay, cool. We'll have to do it. But yeah, thanks everybody for listening. Please head on over to Apple Podcasts or your choice of podcasting platform and give us a 5-star review and or rating. That really does help out the show. Jess, the Dark Nerd, male Jess, would you like to, and just clarifying here, would you like to give everyone our social media details?
Do we want to, Jessica, do you have some social media details you want to give out? I don't know. This is my first time meeting you. I don't know who you are. So do you have a website or Twitter or who are you? Where can we find you?
Follow me on Twitter at miss_jess03. And I have a website, jessicamarkramwrites.com, or follow my Twitch, which is just Angry Nerd Girl, twitch.tv.
Angry Nerd Girl. I like that.
Boom. And pick up her role-playing game supplements on, where can they find them?
On my website or on DriveThruRPG DMs Guild or itch.io.
Fantastic. Thank you, Jess, for remembering to have her do that. Uh-huh, uh-huh, mm-hmm. And what about our social media deets?
I don't know anything about us. We have nothing. Just kidding. If you're on Facebook, you can find us as Mecha Dragon. Twitter and Instagram at Mecha Dragon Show. As mentioned earlier, podcasts, you can find us anywhere quality podcasts are found. Anchor, Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, CastBox, Stitcher, everywhere else. Give us a thumbs up, a 5-star, tell all your friends, and review us. We like to hear what you love, and we want you to pretend and tell us stuff you don't love. But send us an email at mechadragonshow@gmail.com. Questions, comments, corrections, or topics on what you want to see or what you want us to know you wish about. And we will see you in the next episode of Mecha Dragon.
All right. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.
Our music is Overworld by Kevin MacLeod from Incompetech.com, licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0, creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0.